are listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every morning at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, this show brings you answers and options to raising your children today and in our constantly changing future. Personally, I can't think of a better way than teaching them how to give their life direction, purpose, and possibility. Which is why I'm excited to have back as my guest today, Dr. Shelley Zavala. For those who didn't hear the last show, Shelley is a recognized presenter in neurobiology and spirituality and assists clients in her successful private practice by teaching them to take ownership of their lives by creating a life through intention. Dr. Zavala has been working with clients on understanding intention for the past 10 years and has appeared on Bravo Television and numerous radio shows. She has her bachelor's degree in cultural anthropology, a master's degree in counseling psychology, and a doctorate in clinical psychology, and she's also a licensed marriage and family therapist. Over the past 10 years, Dr. Zavala has conducted seminars and training for therapists, businesses, and not-for-profit organizations. What I'd like to do, and I'd like to really get into it, because one of the things I realized when I spoke to you before is I was left with so many more questions. So not only do I have a lot of questions, but we even have some listener questions that have come in.
So
one of the things that I'd like to do is just kind of start with the fact that, you know, it seems like we are all in a very fast-paced lifestyle right now. With the, the way our economy is going and everything, I feel like we've all ratcheted everything up a little bit to try to keep up with what we were doing before. I know we're also easily distracted by what you describe as, you know, what gets in our way. So share, if you could share with us how we can identify these everyday obstacles that are blocking us and how we can clear them out of our path.
Okay. This is a really good question because I think we think by doing more, we're going to have more and be more. And it's actually the opposite. And a couple of things I love to have clients do is, first of all, I have them sit down and look at an undone list. There's a lot of things that we just sort of get sidetracked from that we really need to get done and get them out of our way. And a really silly example of this was I needed a new shower head. And I finally, after months of having an awful shower head, bought a new one, which cost me all of like $25, and I couldn't believe how much better I felt than after every morning having this new shower head. But it set my day off well. So we've got to know what's undone that we need to get rid of, clear out, not have in our life, or fix, and get those taken care of. And who's going to do that? Do we need to do it? How many times do we do things that we could actually have someone else do and we don't need to be bothered with it? Because our energy needs to be put into things that are helping us be the best version of ourselves that we can contribute to society. Is that making sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of my weaker points too, is being able to delegate those things that somebody else could be doing and could very well be doing better than I could anyway.
Exactly, and they're not doing what they need to be doing in life. So that's number one. Number two is Stephen Covey has a time matrix where he talks about things being important and urgent and not important and not urgent. And we're so stuck in doing every day this urgent, important box, things that we have to get done. But we don't make enough time for this not urgent but important box. And those are the things that really contribute to our lives and to others' lives. And we need to make sure that our priority is actually that box. And those are the things that are long-term goals and are helping us to be the best version of ourselves and getting away from this doing that we're always stuck in. You know, there's a fallacy about being happy. And I was talking to a client this morning. She goes, well, this would make me happy. And I go, well, it can make you happy, but is it a purpose for you in life? Is it something that brings purpose and a sense of better to the world and yourself? And I likened it to chocolate makes me happy, but it doesn't make me a better version of me.
And it's and it's probably very short-lived as far as the chocolate
absolutely.
High.
Exactly. So we've got to also be very clear what's in our life that's just sort of a feel-good for the moment but isn't really contributing to the betterment of ourselves and others. That's another question we need to ask ourselves. Does this contribute to us and others?
That's right. Absolutely. I know that you talk about the seven essentials, the seven essentials that gives life purpose and possibility, and I know that ties into goals as well. Share those with us.
Okay, what's really interesting is you'll go to so many seminars on goals and they'll talk about SMART goals being specific and measurable and attainable and realistic and trackable. And that's all great and it's all very cognitive, but I think having purpose has to come from a deeper level. And one of the first things, when I look at people go, what's the difference between purpose and having goals? Purpose incorporates goals. Purpose is living with your clear set of values, working with your strengths, and working with your goals. And all of those three have to be in alignment with each other. So it's very important that if your goals don't fit with your values, it's not going to work. You might be able to accomplish it, but it's not going to work long term.
Well, give us
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But give an example for the listeners on what you're saying is if there's an incongruency, it's not going to fit. But yeah, just give us an example.
Okay. Well, for example, I find a lot of people, we're encouraged in this world to look at money as a goal. But what your values might be more about making a difference. And so if you look at your value about making a difference, the money will come anyway. So your goal needs to be more around, okay, I'm going to make a difference through working for Habitat for Humanity, for example, and that's my goal and my value is I'm making a difference. If you don't have a value around a goal, it's just not enough strength around it. So there's got to be an alignment. Another, we get very stuck on this external piece of goals, that it has to be something outside ourselves. But it's actually more needs to be goals need to come from the inside. Things are going to make us feel we desire it, we're passionate about it, rather than just something that we have. Because a lot of people come in and say, well, their goals, they like their goals, but they have all these obstacles. And often there's an obstacle because we're not passionate enough. When you're passionate enough, you'll step over the obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
You won't allow them to get in the way. So that's where people fall down with affirmations too. They'll get into affirmations, but there's no heart behind it. Guess what? The brain doesn't get enough feedback of this is really important.
Right. Exactly. I mean, what you're saying is that they can go through the affirmation, but it's nothing more than a chant unless you're internalizing it. I was having a conversation with a group of people and one of the guys presented an opinion and I didn't necessarily agree with it, but a little bit later I was speaking with one of the people that was in that conversation and they passed on that opinion that the other person that said, and he justified the value of it by saying that that particular guy made over $5 million last year. And I thought, I don't know that has nothing to do with the subject matter. You know, in other words, his opinion in regards to, and it was a political thing, and I went, I know what you mean. It's that for that person to somehow have a more powerful opinion, or his opinion should be looked at higher based on the fact that he made more money, and it wasn't what he made the money at. So in other words, if you have somebody that made $5 million selling widgets, and he's given me advice on how to sell widgets, guess what? I'm going to listen. But if he's giving me advice on politically what his views are on something, it's no different than the guy sitting on the corner that's asking for money that didn't make anything last year.
Exactly. But as a society, we've sort of got this talk about money, and it's so interesting because if you actually get your eyes off the money and onto your values and your goals, the money will come with it. And that's sort of the illusion that society puts out there because it's something external that we get hooked into. So the first thing about being clear with purpose and living this life is having clear values and then having a clear set of goals around that and knowing the strengths. So those are the first three of those seven that I focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one's probably going to surprise you too is that having relationships is a real priority. It needs to be part of your purpose. And this doesn't mean just a partner. It means with your family, with friends, with business people. Those relationships need to be a priority. And they've got to be part of your purpose. And with that relationship also needs to be with yourself.
Yep.
You've got to have a clear sense of yourself. If you're always giving to everybody else and you don't know who you are and what's important to you, you know, this goes back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You've got to know who you're about. This is our goal, and being clear about not who you were as that child or what other people want for you. It's who are you at the core of your being.
Right.
And
okay.
Part of this is understanding the brain. So this is number six, is the brain, is understanding how the brain works and how to utilize it to achieve your purpose. Because it's actually sort of like using a computer. You've got to learn how to use your brain to make it work for you. And then the number seven part of having purpose is living from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's really key. If we don't have heart in what we're doing, we don't have passion, it's just like that affirmation. It's just a goal. It's too dimensional.
Right.
Things need to be three-dimensional for us to create them.
Yeah, yeah, and what I hear you saying is you're just going through the motions, and
that's
not what we were put here for. That's not why we're on this earth, is to go through the motions.
And so many people do that, Alan. I mean, this is what I find over and over, is they come in and go, I was here a year ago sitting in this space. Why am I still here? It's 5 years or 10 years, and they've just, all they've been doing is that urgent and important box. They haven't moved beyond just sort of surviving, that sort of living in that reptilian brain of getting through the day. And why would we want to do that? Where does that get us?
Well, you got me convinced. You mentioned the brain, and I know, tell us a little bit about, you know, the science of neurobiology and how important it is to this subject that we're talking about.
Oh, it's so essential for a couple of reasons. First of all, is if we are not conscious of where our thoughts are and how our brain works, is we just live from our past, which means we go through life with what we know. And actually, we want to get out of sort of what we know, because then we're just repeating the same pattern over and over again. And most of us do want something different and something more. So we have to get out of this. So we think we have this free will, but we're actually, all we're doing is repeating what we know. So first thing is looking at possibility, that dream. And to be able to do that, Alan, we have to get into the right part of our brain. Because
mm-hmm.
I look at it like this. Our left brain is like a computer.
Right.
Okay, you tell it what to do and it's going to do it, but you've got to program it. And if we live just from the left brain, that's all we're going to get. And that's pretty limited in my eyes. The right brain is more creative. It's going to come up with ideas that think outside the box. It's very present. And I look at it, we need to use the right brain to operate the left brain, but they have to operate together.
Right.
So we've got to make that a choice, because most of us actually automatically operate more strongly from the left brain. So then we get more logic and just existing.
Yep.
I like it. Look at it this way. Use your right brain, be creative, think outside the box, and then the left brain figures out how to do it.
There you go.
So we want to bring in both parts of the brain here. So that's one component. The second component is understanding the neurotransmitters, that what we tell ourselves every day, what we're feeding ourselves every day, is creating those receptors in the brain and creating a connection that becomes a habit. So that's where goals are really essential. They've done study after study to show there's a top 3% of the population who achieve success, and however we want to look at success, and they do that by writing their goals down. That 3% has nearly 100% success rate of reaching their goals.
Uh-oh.
Would you invest in something that has nearly 100% success? I would.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it works. We know it works. But you've got to know the system, and you've got to work at it. It doesn't just happen. But they showed a couple of studies. One of them was a Harvard study in 1979. The top 3% of the graduates wrote down their goals. They earned 10 times more than the other 97% 10 years later. And then another 10% had verbal goals. They knew what they wanted but didn't write them down. They earned twice as much as the last 77%. And then the last percentage, they obviously stayed very low on their income. This is 10 years later. They've also shown a study of 20 years and a Yale study where they showed the top 3% earned, and I know this is all just financial, but this is just how they marked it then, is that top 3% earned 10 times more than the other 97% of the population. So it works. We know it works. And why it works is because the brain doesn't know the difference between what we're imagining and putting emotional energy into and what's real. So whatever you're imagining and envisioning, the brain is thinking it's real, and it's going to keep recreating that. Anything that has a strong emotional pull, anything that we repeat over and over, the brain's going to create a receptor for and then create neural nets to hold that information, and then it's going to be working day and night to create whatever that is.
Well, this is about the perfect time right now for me to ask one of the listener questions, and this is a listener's question that was emailed in. It says, I have written goals, but never seem to be able to complete them. What am I doing wrong?
Well, most people, one, they don't make it a priority. It's got to be a priority. When you get up in the morning, last thing you go to bed, you've got to be working and thinking, what today am I going to do towards those goals? They put them out there half-heartedly, and if you go to work half-heartedly or you raise your kids half-heartedly, guess what? Are you going to do a great job?
That's right.
So it's the same thing. It has to be as important as the other things, and if not more important than the other things in your life. And sometimes you got to look at, what are you willing to sacrifice? I put myself through college, Ellen, and I worked 3 jobs. There was times I didn't know how I was going to pay for the next meal, but I was determined I was going to do it. So there wasn't, I didn't think about, could I or could I not do this? I was just going to do whatever it took. And that's the thing with goals. You figure out a way as you go. You've got to keep being imaginative and thinking outside the box, right brain thinking.
Well,
everything's doable. It's just you've got to be willing to own it.
Yeah, take responsibility for it and go for it. And when I read this question, and it brought another question into my mind, which was, as I read it, I thought, where are they? Where are your written goals? You know, so in other words, if I was having a conversation, it says I have written goals, but they never seem to be. And I thought, because if they're written and they're in a drawer somewhere and you haven't looked at them in 5 years, that could be the problem. So on the other hand, if they're taped up on the mirror and every morning when you get up and look into that mirror, they're right there, I think that's when you're going to find that they're going to kick in. So, again, the person that sent this in, and I really appreciate when people email these questions in, that would be something, too. We understand that you wrote them, but where are they?
Absolutely. And this is the thing. You can't have it around you enough. I do vision boards. I have goals written out. I have a success story on my mirror. I've created everything I've wanted in my life. I've done that through what I'm teaching. By having my goals written out, feeling my goals, we're all very visual. You know, 75% of our senses are visual, so the more times we can have them visual, the better, the more stronger pull. They've got to have an emotional pull. They've got to feel real for you. There's got to be a desire, that heart desire, for you to create them. And people are capable of really anything if they're willing to put that effort and energy into it. They can't have excuses. There can be no excuses. As soon as you allow doubt or fear, and actually one of the biggest components, Ellen, of people not reaching their goals is stress. And the reason why is stress takes us to the amygdala, which is this little part of the brain that is, they call it the reptilian brain, and it's all about you just reacting to life. You can't react. Goals don't work in reaction mode. So if you're under stress, one, you're releasing different chemicals into the body. Your brain is about survival.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get out of that stress mode and allow the space for you to be more in that frontal lobe for you to be able to create, you know, allow that brain to be creative and create those goals. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it actually, it because you're touching on that, now I had a listener who didn't email it in, but they called and they talked to me and they said that, you know, you're going to have her on. And I know that she has some knowledge in neurobiology. They said, is it true that that smoking takes your body into a stress, or the anxiety is also a stress state, and that when you have a lot of stress, which smoking is one of the things that does it, that it actually causes problems in your veins throughout your body because it makes your blood run faster, which makes your blood believe that it sends certain things in to, like, put little patches in because it's going so fast it's afraid that that it's causing a different problem. But I, it was, as they were explaining it, I thought, you know, I've never heard of that, but I'll certainly try to ask it. Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense. And it's like this fight or flight syndrome that we get into whenever our blood's flowing fast and we've got different chemicals running through, the adrenaline running through our system, is we're not in a mode in the brain or the body that's saying, what can we create here? It's all in survival and am I safe? You know, it's this big question. Am I, if you're always having to sort of feel like, am I safe, then how can you be processing and thinking about moving your life forward? So when any time you're doing something negative, you're releasing different peptides, which come through the receptors in the brain that get released into the bloodstream that are now more about survival. So you've not got these peptides that are being released that are positive, that are, okay, a visual or something good, because we're trying to create receptors on the cell that are more positive, that are more goal-oriented. So I don't know if this is making sense. But if you're doing something negative to yourself and your body's reacting to it in a certain way, then there's not going to build the receptor sites on the cell for positive transmitters to come, neurotransmitters to come through. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, and it poses another question for me personally is then how does the brain know the difference between a level of anxiety that happens, say that somebody's jumping a motorcycle and they crash, versus the excitement of, you know, of jumping and succeeding, or the person that likes a roller coaster, you know, the thrill that they get from a roller coaster. How does the brain differentiate between an excitement or you know, people that like scary movies, you know, that's kind
right.
of, you know, that's an excitement and they seem to really like that, versus something scary, really scary happens to you and it's not one that you want to happen. How does the brain differentiate?
Well, essentially they run on the same continuum, interestingly enough, but the difference is that when it's scary, and say you release the adrenaline because an accident's happening, it's momentary. I mean, it just happens and it's done and your adrenaline comes down. But most of us tend to live in such high stress, we keep releasing this adrenaline. And that's what's really bad for us, is when we keep allowing the adrenaline into our body and then the muscles get tight and the cells wear down. So, because then the body, the cells, the protein in the cells cannot be, they don't work, it doesn't work properly. So then the cell breaks down. And then that's how we age. That's how, you know, you can look at someone who's, say, been through a lot of stress in a year, and you can just look at them and you can tell that they've aged, because what's happened is that protein in the cell hasn't been able to, nourish itself. So that's the difference. Our adrenaline was made to, so we could escape a crocodile chasing us or a bear chasing us. But we live so much under this constant stress every day that our body just thinks we're constantly being chased by crocodiles, and it's going to react that way. Well, it's like driving your car with your foot on the accelerator. It's going to wear the engine out really fast. So it's really important that we learn how to bring our body down from that state of being, from that adrenaline and fight or flight or busyness. But it takes a conscious effort. And also there's other stresses too. There's chemical stress, there's the physical stress, overworking, lack of sleep, not eating well enough. All of that's going to play into how your cells respond to the world as well. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. And I'm looking at another question that I think fits right in here. And it says, how can I change my painful life experiences into meaningful life experiences? So I think
that's a great question. That's a really good question. And I think the part of it is you've got to come with forgiveness of what's happened, acceptance of what's happened. And acceptance, forgiveness does not mean you have to like it or that it was even okay. But coming to acceptance allows for a place of peace with it. As it is what it is, and it was sad or it was painful, and just sort of letting it be what it is and not trying to actually change it in that sense, sort of make it that's what happened. And then you come in, so what's that inviting me to learn? What can I do with this now? Now that I have this information, what did I learn about me? What did I learn about the world? And now how can I put that out there into the world? Everything we go through, to me, is a chance to learn. But most of us get stuck in the blaming game or in the I can't move past this and they get stuck in it. It feels too painful. Rather than just going with it, and a lot of times we get stuck in it is because we try to resist the past or the pain. And actually we want to go with it and just acknowledge and say, yes, when we resist it, the energy goes away from it, meaning it sort of dissipates more. Physics show what we resist persists and what we push against strengthens. So there's more wanting to come from this acceptance place, invite it to come in and what am I going to learn from this experience? And I'm trying to think of a good example. So many times clients will even come in and they don't want to share a story with me because they said it's too painful. And when they share it and they get it out, they go, wow, it doesn't feel as painful anymore. Because now they've come to a place of letting it not be a secret. They've now accepted what is. And now I'll ask them the question, what do you want to do with this now? That's how I think we become more who we are,
right,
by getting ourselves.
Well, what can they do now? And again, going back to this one, you know, it's painful life experiences. And again, you're saying if we're going to turn them into meaningful ones, we're going to just take what it is we could learn from it and not dwell on the rest. But
yes.
I think for a lot of people, and especially in this economy, there's a constant reminder. You know, so, you know, if you have now a lot of people who are out of work, which I think, you know,
you know,
that's followed with a level of depression. You have people that are now feeling as though, you know, they're a failure. So now if you have a head of household who's lost their job and they feel as though they're letting down the family, you know, on the one hand, yes, if, you know, they go in and they sit down and they talk about it and they say, you know, I'm really angry because my boss didn't do what they needed to do, or they could be angry at themselves because they didn't go to college to put themselves in a better position to get a better job. But there's still that constant reminder. I mean, how can they really get beyond it when you're constantly reminded of it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think part of it is how you're looking at it, because, you know, it is tough, especially in this economy for a lot of people. But again, and I'm not trying to minimize what's happening, but it is what it is, meaning you can feel the anger and process that, and absolutely I understand that fear and concern and am I going to get a job, but where does that get you? By going into that's what I call the story and the chatter,
mm-hmm.
is it gets you distracted from actually looking outside the box and thinking about possibility. In the 1930s, when we had the Great Depression, there were many people who were very, very successful during that time. It's because they thought outside the box and thought, well, what do I need to do differently here? We are not in the same world that we had, you know, 5 years ago. So now, because we're not in that world, what do I have to do differently to support my family? I can't do what I was doing. I'm going to have to do something different.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And what you're telling them is look for the new opportunities that are going to arise out of the situation you're given.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And part of the problem is fear. Fear keeps people stuck. They're afraid they won't be able to do it. They're afraid what people will think. They're afraid that they, you know, are not smart enough. And all of those, fear is just an illusion, false evidence appearing real. It's we can, if we really want something, we can create it. You know, people who are very successful in life, Alan, have way more failure than people who are not, you know, not as successful. That's how you learn. Is by trying something out and you see what doesn't work and then you try it differently or you do something different. But to me, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Yep.
It's a different world. We have to act differently now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just making a plan and thinking, get out of what you know. And it's sort of, it may sound a little weird, but we've got to figure out what it is that we don't know that we don't know. So we can do something different. And it's what I call becoming the observer of your life. Get out of your past of what you've done and look at your life from a different perspective and see what, if you were looking at your life, what could you see as possibility outside of what you've already done?
Well, it makes sense. And, you know, one of the other questions that I had, and I thought about it based on something that somebody had told me, because I was giving kind of giving advice to somebody who was going through a tough time. And I guess I don't think of myself as being like Mr. Outgoing, Mr. Whatever, but I, obviously I'm on a radio show. I guess I'm okay with talking. But and, and obviously, I mean, as people can hear you, I mean, you have this great voice, very outgoing. I love the power in your voice. It's great. But the thought that I had is that for a lot of people, it's really hard for them to freely express what they feel to others with any level of purpose and possibility. What would be some advice you would give them?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I'm going to give you a little bit of my history. I was diagnosed actually in elementary school as being mentally retarded, and got told over and over again, you know, your Dharma's in special ed classes. Didn't speak a lot when I was really young. I didn't think I was capable of much. And I got to a point in my life, Ellen, I was about 19, and I just go, you know what? This is not how I want to be in the world. And you've got to make a choice. And I made a decision at that time, and it's been a life journey, now being in my 40s, where I've chosen to create something different than what I knew and than what I've been told. And so coming forward is going to be uncomfortable. It's like using your other hand. But like anything, if you practice it enough and you're determined enough and you want it, you'll figure out a way to make it happen. So talking to people that's uncomfortable and not something you're used to doing, it's finding a way that does make it comfortable. One of the things I always teach people when you want to share is I would say to them, I'd start off with, I'm really uncomfortable with sharing, but because this relationship with you is important, I am going to share this. So I start with a compliment, I start with the truth, and that eases their anxieties.
Sure.
And creates a connection, because we all want to be seen, heard, and got, right? We mm-hmm. all want to be seen, heard, and got.
Yep.
So if you connect with that person first, how are they not going to connect back? That's how you're going to create a good connection, a good relationship with someone. And the more you practice that, the more people come forward, the more comfortable you are going to be with sharing.
Well,
I also find when you're passionate about something, too, you want to share it.
Oh, absolutely. Now, when you talked about as far as being in school when you were younger, I guess I have kind of a question and a comment. Were you labeled? I mean, did they label you to the
point? Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. so then what I hear you saying is you just didn't accept the label.
No.
You got
no,
to a I point didn't. And said, I'm not going to accept that label. So in the same sense, some of the other people going through various struggles, if you've gone through school or family or whatever that have labeled you, whatever that may be, just choose not to accept it. That's
absolutely. I'm so against labels. You cannot go with labels. If I had listened to every label I had, I would not be sitting where I am today. And there's constant throughout life. We get that. See, this is the hard thing. When you want to think outside the box, there's going to be plenty of people who are going to try and pull you down constantly. Even when I went to go back to school to become a therapist and do my doctorate, I got told, well, there's too many people doing that, or, you know, you won't be able to make it, or I could tell you the hundreds of stories I've heard of why it would be so difficult for me. And yet I have an amazing practice. There's absolutely nothing I haven't done. It's because I don't allow those labels. I don't allow people to tell me what I can and can't do. I do what's in my heart, and I listen to that, and I put it out there, and I create it. I don't listen. You can't. You're going to get yourself really stuck if you keep listening to labels and what people tell you you can and can't do, and that's just their own stuff because they don't know that they can do it.
Yep.
And we get stuck in our perceptions and our beliefs that are often old stuff.
Yep. And again, part of the show is Answers for the Family. So if I can share a little bit with the audience is that. Let me give you a little moment to brag on your daughter, because I want everybody to hear the fact that not only were you able to do this for yourself, but you were able to pass on a lot of great things to your daughter. And tell us what you spent the summer doing.
I just sent my daughter off to college. I was so proud of her. I really did rub off on her. Once she made that commitment to go off to college, she made it happen, and I really left it to her own devices. I said, you want to go to college? You figure it out. So she had the skills. She looked at the colleges. I supported her all along, and she created exactly what she wanted to. She went to the college she wanted to go to. She found the place she wanted to live in. She's got a great little apartment across from college, and I helped her move in this summer and got all settled. And she created it. And again, there were some things that were against the odds for her, but she had a very clear vision, and I had a clear vision that I was going to be there to support her. But, you know, Ellen, I think one of the biggest things, yes, I've been there and I'm very proud of her and where she's at, but she did the work. She did all the research, planned the trips, planned the finances. She has a budget. She's doing wonderfully with the schooling because she's owning it. She's not making excuses. And she's figuring out she got a job. She was up there and was able to get a she's in San Francisco. She got herself a job. She set it up because she was able to figure out that this is what she wanted to do. And this is for all of us. Why can we not create what we want? We certainly can. How many times do we hear the stories? There's going to be things that pull us down. Look at Michael Jordan. You know he didn't make his high school basketball team?
Yep.
So, I mean, there's hundreds of stories out there like him. There's always a reason we say we can't do it.
Well, and to add a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when you started this process at the beginning of the summer, or when your daughter, I guess, started this process, she said she was 17?
Yes.
Yes. So I wanted, you know, it's a great accomplishment, but just to add a little bit, she was 17.
Yes.
Going away to college.
Exactly. And that's it. It's never too young. From really a young age, Ellen, I taught her, you know, not perfect parents, don't get me wrong here, but I really, at age five, I was giving her a budget, or not budget, but money, and saying, okay, you figure out what you want to spend it on, and knowing the consequences. I kept giving her responsibility and letting her figure out within that how she's going to be in the world. And there were times where she would say, Mom, why don't you make a decision for me? I'm like, no, because I want you to have the skills to make figure out what's important to you. Mm-hmm. And so often we overcompensate for our kids so they don't know how to make decisions. They don't know how to figure out. And as long as I kept her safe and within sort of certain boundaries, there was times she made decisions that I go, oh dear, this isn't the right decision. But she would come back and tell me that she learned so much more because I let her figure it out. I let her make that decision for herself. And then she was able to own her choice, because then she'd come back and go, well, now I want this. And even though that's what I wanted for her, if I told her that's what she wanted, she would have rebelled against it. So I didn't get a lot of rebellion, and I think part of it is because I was able to let her explore what's important. And that's what we want to give our kids. So when they go off to college, they know what they want. They know how to explore. They know how to make choices. And rather than telling them what to do. Is that making sense?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, as you said that, it reminded me when you were talking about the, you know, having her make the choices, you know, You have parameters, you have boundaries, but they're still making that choice. And I was in Hawaii. I was with my cousin. We were talking about my father, who's no longer with us. And one of the things that I remembered at that time, which fits right here, is I had a serious problem to discuss with him. And I sat down and I was now, you know, over 18. And went to lunch with him and sat down and explained the problem out to him in great detail. And he stopped and he looked at me and he rubbed his chin a little bit. And he sat back in his chair and he said, you know, that's one of those big guy decisions you're just going to have to make on your own.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
You know, and it was like, I'm expecting this, you know, with all the, you know, this great piece of wisdom to come out after he took all the time to sit back in the chair and rub his chin, and it turned out that was the wisdom.
Yes, that and he gave it. You the best advice. See, when the idea is for us to learn to listen to ourselves, and that's what your dad was doing, which is wonderful, is teaching you to go inward and going, what's important to you? Not what's important to somebody else. We can always tell someone else what we think, but you've got to go inside you and figure out what's your goals, what's important, and listen to that and watch the judgment. We get so into what society would say, or my mom would say, or no, listen to what's real for you. There was a lot of times I had people sort of judge my parenting. I think I've done a great job. I look now, there's always going to be someone who's going to judge what you do. You can't be trying to please everybody else by what you do. As a parent, and your job, it's about, are you living with your heart, with authenticity, with your values, with your goals in alignment? Let those people, if they're busy judging you, then they're not focusing on themselves, are they?
That's right. Well, let me tell everybody out there that's listening, this is just a little bit of what one of Shelley's seminars is about. And I know that you have one coming up, and I glanced over at the clock. We've only got about 7 minutes. Can you tell us a little bit about the upcoming seminar, what you're going to be touching on, what they can gain from it, and when it is?
Okay. Well, I have the one coming up in October. It's the 23rd and 24th. It's a Friday evening, 6 till 9, and then Saturday day from 9 till 5, and it's called Life with Purpose and Possibility. And this is actually I teach 3 seminars a year, and this is my favorite one because it just, oh my goodness, talk about touching the heart. I really, it's not your typical, as I said, your typical goals-oriented seminar. I really get people to figure out what's important to them. So we spend part of it, Friday night is more just exploring a little bit of that undone list and what's does purpose mean and how does that look and just exploring a little bit. Saturday we get into the neurobiology, and that's always my favorite part because when you understand the brain, you can drive it. And it's like the more you understand how to operate your computer, the more you can do with it. And that's exactly the same way with the brain. So we really get into understanding how the brain works. So then when the afternoon we spend setting goals and finding a purpose is we can understand how to then utilize the brain to make those happen. And so the afternoon, the Saturday afternoon is more experiential. We really get to do some fun exercises. It really taps into that heart of who you are because by the time we've done Friday night, we've started exploring, Saturday understanding the brain, and then we pull it all together. People get really excited about this part of it. And it's amazing what people create. And I'm just getting excited talking about it because I get people, even though I've taught this in different forms, years later, because I haven't taught it in quite this form, but years later coming back and saying, look what I've created. And one of the people who may actually be speaking at my seminar, we did this type of work, and she's created a nonprofit organization now. So it's just one of many people that I've worked with this type of material and have seen incredible, incredible advances in their life that they never thought possible. So we really look at what is possible that they thought were not possible. So it's very exciting. It's $149 for the day and a half, but I'd love to offer for you, Alan, if you want to give away a couple of tickets to your listeners, you can sort something out. I'll be quite happy to give that away. They can also look at my website, which is www.positivelivingseminars.com. So www.positivelivingseminars.com, or they can call me at 949-752-7955 if they have any questions. I'd be happy to answer them, or they can even email me at drzavala@mac.com, and that's drzavala@mac.com, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, now, is this going to be in Irvine again?
Yes, it is. It's in Irvine, at the Doubletree Hotel, right by the Spectrum, which is pretty comfortable. And I only do this about once a year, so it usually sells out. It's as I said, probably I think one of my favorites because it just really taps into this idea of possibility and what people can create. And what an investment.
Well,
and the great thing, too, is that I have couples who do this.
Yep.
And I love it, actually, when I see families or couples work together because we do a lot of exercises and dyads, and they can come out with family goals. And that just enriches it even more when they can do it and see that they're on the same wavelength there. So it's pretty powerful.
Well, and I just got 2 thoughts that popped in my head. But one is this being recorded? So in other words, for those people, because this show, you know, I'm very thankful and proud of the fact. I mean, I've had people call me or email me that are listening from Malta or from the Philippines or from Pakistan and from India. Okay, they're probably not going to be able to fly in to Irvine in October.
They can if they want.
Yeah. And back then, I'll put it out there. For those of you that know me, I got room in the house. Come on in.
There you go. I've had people as far away as Hawaii and, let me see, Arizona, Texas. So, and I have a person coming from Monterey this time so far, but not quite Alaska or or Pakistan.
Is it something that you put on a CD or a DVD that people can get after the fact? Is that something?
Alan, I'm still working at that. There's a possibility I'll have it done this time. I'm still working on that piece of it. I'm getting there. Technology is definitely something that I'm still learning and getting the hang of, and that needs to be part of my goal, and it has been a part of it this year, was to get it fine-tuned into the best place possible, and I feel like that's where I'm at, so that's how I'm hoping more for next year I'll get that done, but it is still on the to-do list for this time if I get that opportunity. So they can always email me, and okay, I can let them know, and I'll also put it on my website if I do get it done, because I'm hoping to also have my book out, one of my books out early next year as well, Purpose and Possibility.
There.
So I'll be putting that on my website as well.
Well, and I'd love to have you back then, which now should be even more motivation for you to make sure you get it done by then.
Yes, that's right. Oh, I'm very motivated.
I know you are. I know you are.
Clear picture, and I have it in my head and in my brain, and I tell people about it, so I'm very committed to that.
Well, you're having this on my mother's birthday, so would it be much of a distraction if I had her birthday party there?
Oh, the more the merrier. The more the merrier, Alan. Why not? Okay. I mean, I have people from ages of 14. I think my eldest person is 74. So we have quite a range of ages. So she's welcome to come and join us, and we can have birthday cake. Why not?
Absolutely. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's just always a pleasure. I will keep in touch. And look forward to being able to see you there as well.
Sounds great, Alan. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.